This is Moscow Calling. Good evening, everybody. We're transmitting on 11.63, 11.89, 15.16, 15.41, and 15.44 megacycles. At 7:30, four of these frequencies are dropped, and one new one is added. We continue broadcasting until 7:50 Eastern Standard Time on 11.89 and 15.23 megacycles. Our programs for this evening are the news, a review of the day's press, a talk about Vladimir Lenin, who was born 77 years ago today. Then, after some music, we present a newsreel on the hour, sidelights on Soviet life at on the quarter hour, and at 7:30, the news and a commentary on current events. We sign off at 8:10 with the Soviet anthem.
This is Radio Moscow, and here's the news. The Foreign Minister's Council at this evening's meeting finished discussing the financial status of Trieste. Andrei Vyshinsky reported on what the deputies had accomplished in examining this question. After an interchange of views, the ministers reached agreement on all points still outstanding. A Council of Ministers resolution on the work of the Commission of Inquiry into the Trieste financial status was worked out. The ministers then held a private meeting. This morning, the foreign minister's deputies examined the financial status of Trieste. On behalf of the Soviet delegation, Vyshinsky proposed the draft decision on the financial status of Trieste. The Soviet delegation proposes to record, in the first place, that the problems mentioned in the report of the Committee of Experts, according to the statute, come under the jurisdiction of the Governing Council and People's Assembly of the Free Territory of Trieste. Until the statute comes into force, these problems fall under the jurisdiction of the Governor and Provisional Governing Council of the Free Territory. The Soviet delegation also proposes to record that in solving these problems, the economic independence of the Free Territory must be ensured in accordance with the provisions of the Permanent Statute. The second article of the Soviet proposal states that the present customs system should continue to operate pending the establishment of a new system. In contradistinction to the conclusion drawn by the Committee of Experts, the Soviet delegation suggests that for 3 months after the organization of the Government Council of the Free Territory, imports of goods of Italian and Yugoslav origin should be exempted from customs duties. Article 3 of the Soviet document states that during the period from July to September 1947, a deficit may arise in available foreign currency, in which connection the Council of Foreign Ministers considers that should the Security Council receive a request from the Governor and Provisional Government Council for financial help from abroad, occasioned by urgent needs of the first period, the Security Council will recommend that the necessary sum, not exceeding $5 million, would be placed at the disposal of the Government of the Free Territory from the funds of the United Nations Organization. Alphonse for France, Matthews for the United States, and Hall Putsch for Great Britain expressed their agreement with the third point of the Soviet proposal. Hall Putsch also said that the British delegation agreed to a 3 months period for the establishment of a new customs system. As for the other points of the Soviet proposal, the representatives of the United States, Great Britain, and France said they would have to study them. This news bulletin is coming to you from Radio Moscow. Vyacheslav Molotov, the USSR foreign minister, today received the Swedish minister, Mr. Sulman, who is shortly to present his credentials to the chairman of the Supreme Soviet Presidium. It is 77 years today since the birth of Lenin, the founder of the Soviet state. Our reporter went along to the Lenin Museum of Moscow, which was opened just 11 years ago. 7.5 million people have visited the museum in these 11 years. Here are our reporter's impressions of what he saw there today. In the very first hall, I saw several excursion groups. One of them attracted my attention. The excursionists had made one another's acquaintance only an hour before. They were transit passengers, and meeting at the Northern Railway Station, had decided to start their sightseeing in the capital at the Lenin Museum. I went through all the rooms together with them. At the end of the tour, One of them, a demobilized officer, wrote on behalf of the whole group in the visitor's book. Lenin's life teaches us how to live and work in the service of our country. I read the previous entry, too. In fact, I copied it out. It was made by a village agronomer from the Urals, and here's what it says. It would be hard to put into words all that I have felt here. It is a happiness indeed to live in the land of Lenin with Lenin's name in our hearts. I also spoke to Nina Stepani, the curator of the museum. She told me that they're getting new material all the time. Just recently, they received a file of the Iskra newspaper, which Lenin founded at the beginning of this century. This file was discovered by a Soviet army officer in Germany. A French artist has sent in a drawing of the house at Longjumeau near Paris, where Lenin lived at one time. Our correspondent in Yerevan, the capital of Soviet Armenia, writes that three shoe factories, a cloth mill, a knit goods mill, and many other factories making consumers' goods will start operation in Armenia before the end of this year. The output of textiles is to increase by nearly a third compared with 1946, and that of other light industry products by fully a third. Large-scale housing construction is underway in Armenia. A lot of houses are being built for the Armenians who are coming from abroad to settle in the land of their fathers. Speaking of the research work being done in Armenia, President Ambar Tsumyan of the Armenian Academy of Science notes that the range of this work is very wide. Armenian geologists last year located two large ore deposits. The Republic's botanists have bred new crop varieties suitable for planting at high altitudes. This is important for Armenia, as much of the Republic is made up of mountain country. Philologists are working on a comprehensive Russian-Armenian dictionary and on a history of Armenian literature. Academician Abegyan recently completed his History of Ancient Armenian Literature, the result of 30 years' work. President Ambar Tsumyan mentions also that the Armenian Academy is extending the scope of its activities considerably in the current year. Its budget has been increased by 25%. New laboratories and institutes are being set up, and a big astrophysical observatory is under construction. The Kiev Film Studios are making a new picture about the liberation of the Crimea. It is to be called The Third Thrust, and is a combination of documentary and feature film. The producer is Igor Savchenko, a Stalin Prize winner. The film opens with the sight of troops surging forward over the highways and narrow mountain roads of the Crimean south coast, while explosions convulse the earth. The Old Union Board of Sports has endorsed the regulations for the USSR Football Championship. 13 teams will be contesting the title in the first league this year. The first match will be played here in Moscow on May 2nd. It'll be between last year's league and cup winners, Central Red Army Club and Spartak. The head of the Moscow Sports Board promises the city sports fans an exciting summer season. There'll be some 400 contests and 35 varieties of sport. On a flying visit to Moscow from the Kola Peninsula in the northwest is Nikolai Kucher, assistant construction chief of a new hydroelectric station being built there on the Neva River. Interviewed by our reporter, he pointed out that whereas but recently the Kola Peninsula had practically no inhabitants, now it is rapidly turning into a leading industrial area. Large deposits of rare metals have been discovered in this peninsula, nickel mines and refineries have been established, and the new towns of Kirovsk, Manchegorsk, and Nikol have grown up. The power station that Kucher is helping to build will be the third on the Neva River. Its capacity will be 150,000 kilowatts. Together with the already operating second Neva station and the world's northernmost hydroelectric plant on the Tulema River, it will provide sufficient power for the industrial centers of the Kola Peninsula. The construction job is in full swing, but there is no construction site as usually understood. The station is being built underground, 230 feet down. The first section will start generating next year. President Tilly of Hungary has awarded Hungarian decorations to 80 Soviet officers in token of recognition of the Soviet Army's outstanding services in the liberation of Hungary. The Hungarian Republic's highest distinction, the Grand Cross and Star, has been conferred on Marshals Voroshilov, Talbotin, and Malinovsky, and on General Sviridov, Vice Chairman of the Allied Control Commission. The presentation took place yesterday.
Washington dispatches say that though the Senate leaders expect that the Senate will approve the bill allowing the president to spend $400 million on aid to Greece and Turkey, there are yet many signs of uneasiness in Congress owing to widespread opposition to the Truman Doctrine. In the Senate debate, several senators, both Republicans and Democrats, have mentioned letters from voters who oppose the Greta Turkish program. The Washington correspondent of the New York Herald Tribune writes that while the Greco-Turkish project will evidently secure a considerable majority in the House of Representatives and the Senate, few congressmen will vote for it with enthusiasm. Public discontent with the Truman program is also reflected in letters to newspapers and in the comments of certain political observers. Mr. Wallace's offices in New York and Washington have received over 5,000 letters, nearly all of which condemn the policy of interference in the affairs of Greece and Turkey. The Italian socialist leader, Mr. Nenni, says in commenting on the United States foreign policy that in his opinion, the threat of interference in European affairs harbors the danger of the colonization of Italy. The United Nations Secretariat has announced that Egypt demands inclusion in the agenda of the General Assembly session on Palestine of an additional point on annulling the Palestine mandate and proclaiming the independence of the State of Palestine. In Germany, the Congress of the Free German Trade Union Association of the Soviet Zone has elected an executive of 65 members. The 65 have chosen Hans Jendretsky from their midst to be first chairman of the association. At a reception in the House of Soviet Culture, the head of the Soviet delegation which attended the Congress spoke in greeting to the newly elected executive, to the representatives of the Berlin Board of the Association, to the delegates, and to the guests from the Western Zones. On behalf of the Soviet trade unionists, he wished the German trade union leaders further success in their work for unity in the German labor movement. The Polish military mission in Berlin has announced that the removal of Germans from Upper Silesia to Germany will be resumed this week. There are still 10,000 Germans in Upper Silesia at the present time. In China, the two Democratic League spokesmen who went to Nanking to negotiate the release of League members seized by the Kuomintang authorities have yet to return to Shanghai without results. The Tokyo Radio reports a big fire in the town of Inda in the Nagano Prefecture. About 4,000 houses were burnt down and nearly 18,000 people left without a roof over their heads. The Vienna newspaper Wiener Courier reports another Nazi sally at Graz in the British zone of Austria. On Saturday night, large numbers of Nazi leaflets were scattered all over the town. The security authorities have not succeeded in tracking down the clandestine press where these leaflets were printed. And that ends this news bulletin, which came to you from Radio Moscow. We continue now with a review of today's Soviet press. Vladimir Lenin was born 77 years ago today in the Volga town of Simbirsk, and the Soviet press devotes considerable space to this date. Tribute is paid Lenin as the founder of the Communist Party and the Soviet state. Trude speaks of Lenin as the man who inspired and organized the victory of the new social order in Russia. In an article entitled Lenin, the Founder of Soviet Democracy, Izvestia acquaints readers with the great progress made by the Soviet state along the road marked out by Lenin. In the Soviet Union, it says, human dignity has been raised to unprecedented heights. All forms of national oppression have been abolished. Genuine liberty and equality have been established for all the nations and nationalities inhabiting the country. Today's Red Star draws attention to what Lenin and Stalin have said and written about Soviet patriotism as a mighty impelling force of Soviet society. In a discussion about the work of the Marx-Engels-Lenin Institute on the fourth edition of Lenin's writings, Pravda points out that Lenin's works are invaluable for their theoretical development. They are a treasure store of progressive ideas. During the 30 years of Soviet power, Lenin's writings have been published in a total of about 155 million copies. They are widely circulated in many different languages of the Soviet Union
And abroad, too, millions of people study the works of Lenin in their native languages. Pravda's editorial deals with Lenin's teaching about socialist competition. Shortly after the October Revolution, Lenin wrote that socialism, far from stifling competition, offered unprecedented possibilities for its development on a truly mass scale, because for the first time after centuries of forced labor for exploiters, it was now possible to work for oneself. Moreover, this work was based on all the achievements of modern technology and culture. In the Soviet Union, socialist competition has become a movement of millions, the lever by means of which the Soviet people have reorganized the country's whole economic and cultural life on the basis of socialism. It has become a tested method for the construction of socialism. Pravda draws attention to the present socialist competition to mark the 30th anniversary of Soviet power and the successes which have been achieved. More than 100 industrial establishments of Moscow completed their output assignments for the month of April, 10 days ahead of time. Hundreds of factories and mills in Leningrad, the Urals, along the Volga, and in other industrial areas of the country have also fulfilled their April program ahead of schedule. On the 20th of this month, the 10,000th tractor left the assembly line of the Stalingrad tractor plant, which just 4 years ago was nothing but a heap of rubble. And in the countryside, the farmers are working unstintingly on the spring sowing. Pravda comments here, "The free socialist labor of Soviet people is illuminated by the immortal ideas of Lenin and Stalin." The latest news from the countrywide output drive is the entry of Black Sea Merchant Marines who pledged to fulfill their assignment for the second year of the post-war five-year plan by November 7th. Today's papers carry news about the plenary meeting of the Coordinating Council under the USSR Academy of Sciences, which opened in Moscow yesterday. This council was set up to coordinate the scientific activity of the various academies in the Union Republics. Professor Brujevich told the meeting yesterday that the academy institutes had solved close to 300 problems last year. This year, the plan was 446. Sergei Vavilov, the Academy of Science president, said that last year, thanks to the generous assistance of the government, construction of new buildings had been launched, the institutes had received new equipment, publishing had expanded, and new branches of the academy were set up. The meeting continues today. The papers also print the text of the letters exchanged between the United States Secretary of State and the Soviet Foreign Minister on the question of Korea. Pravda reprints from the Soviet newspaper Culture and Life Ilya Ehrenberg's reply to the open letter to a Russian journalist. The letter was written by the American journalist David Lawrence and has appeared in a number of American newspapers. It has also been broadcast by The Voice of America. Franco Toying with a Monarchy is the title of a foreign news discussion in the Trud, noting that President Truman's message about aid to the Greek and Turkish reactionaries met with hearty approval in Madrid. The commentator remarks that the exaltation of Franco and his followers was not at all platonic. They, too, hope for an increase in the support which the Franco regime already receives from certain financial circles of America, Britain, Argentina, and certain other countries. The commentator points out that the resolution adopted by the United Nations Assembly, in spite of the resistance of some countries, the United States and Great Britain, for instance, a resolution which not only condemned the Franco regime, but also paved the way for practical steps to restore civil and political liberties in Spain, this resolution had a favorable effect on the political situation in Spain. For one thing, it encouraged the small and heroic army of partisans. Franco began to feel that even the powerful support of the London City and Wall Street could not overcome the international isolation to which the Falang dictatorship had doomed Spain, and that no loans or military supplies would enable it to smash the democratic movement favoring a republic. Then the Madrid Führer tried to camouflage the fascist essence of his regime by resuming his game with the monarchy. On April 1st, the world learned that Spain had been proclaimed a monarchy, but that General Franco would continue to rule the country with some sort of regency. "There is little need," declares the Trump commentator, "to say that the democratic public of the world has showed only contempt for this maneuver of Franco's."
And that ends this review of today's Soviet press, which came to you from Radio Moscow. Our commentary for this edition has been written by Professor Oleschuk. It deals with Vladimir Lenin, the founder of the Soviet state. Here's what Professor Oleschuk writes.
Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, the founder of the Soviet state, was born 77 years ago today. Lenin has gone down in history as a giant of progressive science, a brilliant statesman who was the founder of the first Soviet state in the world. The Soviet state created by Lenin has passed the test of history. In the Patriotic War of 1941-1945, the USSR saved world civilization from the fascist barbarians, and it emerged from the war stronger than ever. That is vivid proof of the power and vitality of the principles of building the Soviet state as evolved by Lenin and Stalin. Since the death of Lenin, the task of building the Soviet state under new conditions has been continued by Stalin, Lenin's collaborator, and today the leader of the Soviet state. As long ago as on the threshold of our century, Lenin and Stalin, heading the revolutionary struggle of the working class of Russia against the Tsarist regime, gave a theoretical exposition of the problems of a socialist state, a state of workers and peasants. Lenin and Stalin considered that it must be a perfectly new state, differing in principle from the bourgeois state. It must serve not the oppression, but the liberation of the people from exploitation. In 1917, Lenin advanced the theory that the best form of state is a republic of the Soviets. Lenin was the pioneer in seeing the Soviets of working people as a new form of government and a new type of state. Soviet power, Lenin pointed out, is the highest form of democracy. The Soviets are the direct voice of the democracy of millions of working people. Soviet democracy does not simply proclaim rights and liberties. It legislatively ensures their realization by material means. The Soviet state is created by the people. It rests on the people, consists of the people's representatives, and works in the interests of the people. Lenin did more than discover a new form of state. He also put his brilliant discovery into practice. In the face of the furious resistance of the old regime and the intervention, he built a new type of state without precedent in history. From the very first days of the revolution, Lenin devoted himself wholly to this task. Under Lenin's guidance, the construction of the Soviet state administration was begun and a new economic system was created. Workers' control over production and distribution was introduced. The banks, railroads, and big industry were nationalized. From the first days of Soviet power, Lenin attached great importance to the defense of the socialist state. The Red Army was created and developed by Lenin and Stalin. The Soviet state, as Lenin and Stalin both pointed out, derives its strength from the union of the working class and the peasantry. Lenin was the first to draw attention to the important role of the peasantry as an ally of the working class in the struggle to reconstruct society. Proceeding from this premise, Lenin and Stalin worked out ways and means of strengthening the union of the working class and peasantry of Russia and of gradually converting the individual peasant farmsteads into large mechanized collective farms. The multinational composition of the country's population created a number of grave difficulties in the task of organizing a single Soviet state. We know from history that as a rule, multinational states have been failures. Internal strife between the different nationalities comprising them either weakened such states or led to their disintegration. That, for example, was the fate of Austria-Hungary and a number of other states. Lenin and Stalin coped successfully with the difficulties involved in creating a multinational state in Russia. Soon after the establishment of Soviet power, the Declaration of the Rights of the Nations of Russia was published, bearing the signatures of Lenin and Stalin. This document proclaimed the equality and sovereignty of the nations of Russia, their right to free self-determination, and the abolition of all national restrictions and privileges. Lenin and Stalin personally guided the creation of the Soviet National Republics. At the first All-Union Congress of the Soviets in December 1922, a voluntary state association of the Soviet nations was created on Lenin and Stalin's proposal, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The national policy of Lenin and Stalin, which ensures complete equality to all the Soviet peoples, the industrialization of the backward outlying regions, and the rapid cultural progress of the national republics, has completely done away with national oppression and enmity between peoples. The multinational Soviet state passed the grave test of the war with flying colors, emerging from the hostilities stronger than ever. The Soviet system has a totally new economic basis. As set down in the Constitution of the USSR, this economic basis is the socialist ownership of the means of production and the socialist system of economy. Lenin worked out the brilliant plan for the socialist transformation of the Soviet Union's national economy. As a result of industrialization and the collectivization of agriculture, the Soviet Union was transformed from a backward agrarian land into an industrial country. The Soviet state has no antagonistic classes. The people are united morally and politically. Patriotism has become the motivating force behind the development of Soviet society. This has been brought out most strikingly every time the clouds of war gathered around the Soviet Republic. During the first years of the Republic's existence in 1918 and 1921, when the country was in great danger owing to the intervention, Lenin confidently declared that nobody and at no time could succeed in defeating a people in which the working class and the peasantry were defending their own Soviet power, a government of the working people. Indeed, the Soviet state coped equally successfully with the difficulties of peacetime construction and the dangers of war. The war against fascist Germany, which began under highly unfavorable conditions for the Soviet Union, demonstrated the great moral strength of the Soviet people and their progressive ideology. The Soviet state created by Lenin and Stalin proved superior to its enemy, not only in military training and in the morale of its troops, but also in the strength of its rear, in economic development, in the staunchness and unity of the people throughout the war. Today, under the leadership of Stalin, who is carrying on Lenin's cause so brilliantly, the Soviet people are pushing ahead their peacetime construction, which will make the first socialist state in the world stronger and more prosperous than ever. And with this talk by Professor Oleschuk, we end our first news program from Radio Moscow. To fill in until the hour, we're playing some Ukrainian melodies. First, a selection from the opera The Man from Zaporozhye Beyond the Danube by composer Gulak Artamovsky.
Oh!